disbursement and approximately $1,273 a second.
Correct.
For a total of $2,210.
Yes.
So the existing roughly $1,700 has grown to roughly $4,000.
Yes.
You testified about the removal of possibly two or more trees?
Yes.
Is there going to be replacements?
There are a lot of trees there now, as you can see. And if we do remove any trees, they're going to just be.
Just say what exhibit you're referring to.
A7.
Thank you.
It would only be one or two trees that are close to the, I want to call it the rear of the house.
And you're indicating, is it closer to the roadway also, or?
No, it's closer to the riverside. This is Ocean Avenue.
Yeah.
So it would be like this tree right here.
Right, which to me looks like it's closer to Mountain View than it is to the property line with Land's End, but.
It's along.
Or is it in the middle? Okay.
Because we'll have to remove those trees because of the addition. But it's only like one or two trees.
Okay.
Because there's just some large spaces there. You can see right here, A5.
Mm-hmm.
You can see this tree here and this tree here are probably the two that would have to be removed.
You want to just show that to the audience also?
Because the addition is only going to be out here.
You take that down back to the plan. You testify that this 8-foot addition here.
Yes.
You call it a deck?
It, on the first floor, it's a mix, okay? Because this is why we have these doors here, so they can enclose the deck and it would be part of the living space. And then you can open it up and it becomes a deck. But on the second floor.
So on the first floor, was that space just a living space or deck space?
I would say deck space.
Okay, even though you just testified that.
Yeah, it's a mix. It's a mix, yeah.
So the 356 square.
No. That's only 194.
So the difference would be.
Yes.
What's the square footage of the third or roof deck?
The roof deck is. It's, say 30 by 1850.
We just have to be careful. We've just discovered when we move our papers a lot that it messes up our transcripts, or we can't hear it, which we just discovered in the Gelhaus matter because some of our transcripts are unintelligible. So I just want to caution everybody. So nobody talk while we're moving our papers.
The existing width of the building appears to be 27.2 feet.
The length of the house right now? Yeah, that's.
We're adding an addition in front of 3 feet and an addition in the rear of 30 feet, so 30 feet.
Yeah, we have a total of 72 foot 9 inches from the absolute rear of that to the absolute front.
Okay, so we're going from 27 to 70.
Let me see.
That's 72 and 9.
Yeah. And it must be longer now, she's only eating 38.
Okay, Dave.
Which one, architect or engineer?
Architect.
I have all these.
Oh, I like these. From very front to very rear is 42 feet. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the public that has a question of this testimony of this witness? I will close the public portion.
Next witness is our planner, James Gibbons.
Solemnly swear to testimony you're about to give the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
And again, just for the record, we're not related.
Not that we know.
Right, right, that's true.
Maybe way down the pipe.
That's right, way back in Sligo.
And I think Mr. Higgins has testified before this board on many occasions and will accept his credentials.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Higgins, can you describe to the board, the use variance perspective, what the need for this application is?
Yeah, sure, we have to describe to the board already that it's expansion of a pre-existing non-conforming use. You have a pre-existing two-family structure, that the structure itself is being expanded. That's where I think it's an unusual application. Well, the applicant is expanding the structure. In my opinion, he's not expanding the intensity of the use. You're going from two-bedroom units to two-bedroom units. It's simply trying to improve the livability of these units within structure and to improve the aesthetic appearance of the building. So I don't think, when I look at this, your R2 zone did not permit a two-family structure. It's an expansion of the pre-existing two-family structure. And in my opinion, it's a technical variance because the intensity of the use is not being expanded. If it were going from two-bedroom units to two-three-bedroom or two-four-bedroom units, then clearly an expansion of the intensity of use. But that's not the case in this instance. It's simply trying to improve the livability of the unit, I mean, the viability of the unit, and also the appearance of the unit. In addition, there are bulk variances that have been described for expanding the pre-existing non-conforming side yard setback and the pre-existing non-conforming front yard setback along Mountain View Avenue, as well as the technical variance, again, for having to build on expand a building on a lot that doesn't have a conforming lot width. So I think essentially that's the nature of the variances. With regard to the D2 variance or expansion of a pre-existing non-conforming use, the standard there is whether or not what's being proposed is going to improve the functionality of the site, the appearance of the site, and also whether or not it's likely that that use would continue to exist on the site if the variance were not done. And in this instance, you have a situation where you do have an existing two-family structure. It could be raised within the existing footprints and not even have to come to this board for approval. It would simply be an application for a building permit to essentially for a building permit to raise the structure, as long as it maintains the existing footprint, but in terms of setbacks, in terms of areas, square foot of the building, it wouldn't have to come to this board. And quite frankly, like, especially for the applicant, like, that's, if this weren't approved, that's what you would do. So this non-conforming use will continue to exist regardless of whether or not this application is approved. It's approved. What's being proposed here is an improvement, and that improvement involves an increase in floor area to allow reasonably sized bedrooms. And in fact, on the second floor, one of the bedrooms is 7 feet by 6 feet, I believe. And the dining room is like 6 feet by 8 feet, if my memory serves me right. So it's a very small unit. And while it can be lived in, it's really not the type of thing that's conducive to living, to year-round living, something that's consistent with what's in the neighborhood. Another improvements are the aesthetics of the exterior of the building. You can see from the architectural that it's going to be substantially improved in terms of appearance. And then having the garage space within the building, eliminating the stone area in the back, so you have more green area on the site, and the cars actually inside the building. So first of all, they're not parked outside, and which aesthetically I think is better, and functionally it's better because then the residents can get into and out of the car without having to be exposed to the elements. And in fact, I can give you a very personal situation there where my wife is disabled, we have to lift her in the car and out of the car. If I didn't have a garage, we couldn't go out, but it would be impossible. So I think that's an important aspect of this exploitation. And then the other thing is that this will result in the living space being raised above flood elevation, so that it's a safer situation, so they do have public safety. And the other thing I do want to show to the board, so while this area is zoned R2, when you look at the character here, and you have a 24-unit townhouse development to the south, you have the Gators to the north, which has now approval, and I don't know if they've constructed it or not, for 24 units, plus the marina. And then you have this very narrow street.
Not a marina.
What's that?
Not a marina.
Not a marina. Okay, it's not a marina now. Okay.
Correct.
Oh, okay. I stand corrected. But you do have the 24 units.
Yes.
I don't know if they've been constructed yet.
No.
But, and then you have this very narrow strip of land with Mountain View Avenue, which again is a narrow street. And right now you have four structures on it, three single family and one two family, and a possibility of one additional residence being constructed at the rear. But it's sandwiched between this much more intensive development on either side. But the fact that you have a two family on the site, I don't think there's any substantial negative impact on the area. In fact, I think it's been better with the area than a single family, because it is such a small area that's squeezed in between the more intensive uses to the north and the south.
Can you just turn that around to show everybody what you just pointed out?
So I just pointed out on A5, the fact that Mountain View Avenue is pretty much sandwiched between much more intensive developments within north and the south. And this area is a very small area. And what's being proposed here is a two-family on an oversized lot. I think is appropriate use in this area. I think expanding the building would be more consistent with what a residential structure should be in terms of the floor area, in terms of the appearance. I think there's a substantial improvement rather than a detriment. So, and when I look at this, I think that the proofs for the D2 variance have been met. With regard to the bulk variances, again, I think there is a situation here where clearly there's a hardship. You have a lot that's 30 feet wide, and that's undersized. But if you hold a 25-foot setback, so assuming this were a vacant lot, if you held a 25-foot setback in the front, and 7-foot setback on the side, the south, you'd have an 8-foot-wide building. And to construct a conforming building on this lot, it would fully conform in terms of setbacks, would have to be 8 feet wide and 100 feet long. That's 8,800 square feet, whereas the ordinance on this size lot would permit.
Jim, just turn that around and show them what you showed.
Yeah.
And that arises because you have two front yards at Mountain View.
Front yard, Mountain View, and Ocean Avenue. So the building would be 8 feet long and 100 feet, 8 feet wide, 100 feet long, which would be ridiculous, quite frankly. Your ordinance, when you look at the reasons for requiring a front yard setback on both streets, and let me find this here on my notes. Okay, it says the intent of the ordinance is to allow for, quote, the continuation of the house sight line to remain consistent on both streets which a corner property fronts. So clearly, if you have a number of houses that extended further down Mountain View Way on the same side, maybe I'll do this, on the same side, if it's extended further down, and they were all set back 25 feet, it would be appropriate for this to be set back 25 feet. Clearly, there's only one property to the west, that property is a 40-foot width. So you're not going to have a building set back 25 feet on that property if one's ever constructed. It's going to be much closer to the mountain, probably very similar to what's on the subject site. And then the ordinance first went on to say that in cases where one of the front property, front yard setbacks would be more consistent with the adjoining property or treated as a side yard, that the side yard setback shall apply for that side only. And what the applicant has done is actually the addition to the house of the setback, 7 feet, which is a side yard setback. So that technically doesn't apply with this section of the ordinance, but I think it does apply with the intended ordinance in this regard. So I think what's being proposed as far as a setback on Mountain View Avenue is appropriate, and continuing the setback to the rear, and again, we will look at maybe looking at H7. Again, 4.8 foot setback being continued along that's the south side. You have such a distance between that south property line and the existing townhouses to the south. So that I don't think anybody looking at it can tell whether that setback with 4.8 feet or 7 feet is required. So I think it makes sense to continue the existing setback of the building rather than jog the building in functionally and aesthetically. I think it's better. Other things to point out is that while it looks like the applicant is doubling the size of the building, that's really has to be taken in context of what exists on the site now. The existing building has a footprint that a building covers 18%. The ordinance permits 50%. So what exists on the site now is something that is much less than half of what could exist on the site in terms of building coverage with regard to your ordinance. What's being proposed by the applicant is a building coverage of approximately a little bit less than 37%. It's 36.7. So that's still more than 13% less, or 750 square feet less, than the ordinance would permit on a lot of the size. So it's not like the applicant is trying to max out the lot. It's simply trying to provide a building that has livable space within it, and yet it fits in with the character of the area. So when I look at the variances that are being requested, I don't see any reason why the variances shouldn't be granted. It's a very unusual lot, it has substantial constraints, and I don't think there's any substantial negative impact on the surrounding area or on your zone plan. Other than the variances that are requested, everything else with the building either complies with or is substantially less than what the ordinance would require. So in that regard, I think that the bulk variances can also be granted.
Any members of the board have any questions of that testimony? We'll open it to the public. Is there anybody in the public that has a question of this testimony? Okay. Said no. Then okay. Thank you very much. We'll close the public portion. Your next witness.
Yes. The last witness is the applicant himself, Martin Dan, who owns the building.
Mr. Fang, you want to raise your right hand? Just solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give us the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, sir.
Can you state your name and spell your last name for the record?
My name is Amal, the last name is Fang, P-H-A-N.
And you're the owner of the subject property? You can put your name down.
Okay.
You're the owner of the subject property?
Yes, I have been the owner since 2003.
That was my first question. I declined to answer the second question. Going to my third question.
We have a witching hour.
Describe what the property was. Is it a two-family home when you purchased it?
Yes, that's one of the reasons we bought. Probably because at that time we had a big family, and also my sister-in-law too. So we have two families.
Okay. And you purchased a home in 2003, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You know, before that, do you have any knowledge how old the property is, how long the property has been there?
Based on my knowledge, the house has been built since 1917. Been a long time.
And as far as you know, it's only been 2 families.
Since the first day I moved in, I've seen the 2 families, so I don't know when it was built or whatever. I don't know.
Can you describe what it looks like now for a house? You want to look at any pictures? Just give me pretty pictures on the
The house looks like as depicted in A,
A5.
A5?
That's accurate.
That's an accurate picture of your house?
Yes, this is my house.
And the house is 1.5 stories, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and there's 2 bedrooms on each floor?
Yes.
And one bedroom on each floor?
2 very small bedrooms.
Okay. And, it's approximately,
I believe the first floor roughly about 1,000 square feet.
And you're now seeking, approval of the board for use variance and bulk variance so you can build, elevate machines on the property, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and why do you want to do that?
There's many reasons, but more like a personal reason, because I came from a big family. My parents got away over that time. And one of the reasons my parents cannot walk up the stair. So that's one of the reasons when I look into the new plan, I look at elevator, because I think about when I get it old, my children here, they will support me.
You hope?
You hope?
I believe it. And, so in the talk about elevation, why do you need elevation?
I think the board can take it.
Okay.
We require you to elevate the home, but if you're going to do anything to it, you have to raise it.
You really have to raise it.
Yes.
And just talk about the addition, the purpose of adding it, not just raising it, but putting an addition on it as well.
I think the first reason is the way of the house layout, kind of very narrow, and that the roof line very low. You say like one and a half or 2 bedrooms there, just mean that the second bedroom very much, you had right on the ceiling already. So that's mean to be kind of very small. In the long term, we're thinking about whole family. That's mean not just myself, but also my children, so we have to plan for the future.
Okay, and so that follows my next question, your future of your home, is you going to be there permanently? What's your future?
Yeah, I'm planning to retire, because I almost chose to retire, and also my wife. So that's why we discussed my children. At the time, 2003, I have, Sandy Storm. My house damaged. I don't have that much funding to support to rebuild the house. The time there is my kid in college. That's my, all my funding. Now they have to return.
Other questions?
Anybody on the board have any questions of this testimony?
And currently right now, the living area is below the, base flood elevation. Any other questions? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yes. The flood insurance is going to be quite impossible.
I can answer that more information, because currently I pay double, almost like 3 times my flood insurance. Currently. And then one of the requirements, I have to move all my equipment out. And also have to refill my desk at the street level and have the pending, the water level collected. That's the important.
There's no other questions from the board? In the public that has a question? Yes, please, Sam.
Good evening, Mr. Fan. You purchased.
Just state your name so it's on the record of who's speaking. Okay.
When you purchased the unit, you said in 2003, you said that the purpose was because you wanted a two-family home. Were you aware at the time that that was a non-conforming use?
I wasn't aware, honestly, because I bought just one of the, there's a two-family home, I bought a two-family home.
So you never received from the party that you purchased the unit? Or since 2003, a certificate of non-conformity from this board?
I got approval from the zoning, because I took over one of the standard requirements from the town. I calculate the foot elevation, I calculate everything, and I perform to them, and they get me approval. But the time there, 2003, I don't have any funds.
You testified as to the reasons you want to add the addition. But can you testify why it needs to be 2 separate units instead of 1 unit?
Because these have been 2 separate units since the day before. So I wanted.
Why do you want it to be 2 units?
Because we have big family. all my children.
And make sure that you can't have money.
Because that, why I have to go to one unit, because it's only two units for you.
Is there anybody else in the public that has a question or comment? Yes, you'd have to get up and swear in then.
Song is good, that's when you're about to give the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth. Just state your names by yours.
Bianco, F-I-A-O-K-O, I live at 158 Ocean Avenue across Mountain View from Pam. And I just want to say I moved in 2004, and they've been very good neighbors. They've done a lot to improve the aesthetics of the property. They did a lot of landscaping and the inside of the inside home and the upstairs. It's kind of like an attic, if you're tall, you've got to, move your head. So I think what they're doing is great. Out of the flood zone and making it nicer for the family to enjoy. So just wanted to give my comment.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the public that has a question or a statement they'd like to make at this time? Then we'll close the public portion. Do you have any more testimony or is this?
No, I'll rest. Thanks. Always.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any discussion within the board, the members?
You might want to, I think the public might have thought that the comment was based on Mr. Fan's testimony. You might want to just ask any general comment.
Okay.
Members of the public.
We'll reopen it to the public if there is any general comments or statements that like to be made.
Mr. Chairman, I brought today with me a planner to testify. I'd like to introduce him today.
Okay.
It's Brian McPeak, who I'm going to ask to provide his background and his credentials to be qualified as an expert witness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's Brian McPeak, CPDIK. I'm a senior project planner with the firm Paulus, Sokolowski, and Smartcore. This is at 1433 34 South Township. I am both educated and licensed as a professional planner. I've been in practice in New Jersey for approximately 25 years. I've appeared before numerous boards, but I've never had the pleasure of appearing before this board before.
Okay, is there anybody has any objections or okay, we'll accept his credentials at this time.
Okay, you want to raise your right hand? So I'm going to swear a testimony you're about to give us the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. McPeak, you've been here since the beginning. You've listened to the testimony presented tonight?
Yes, I have.
Have you conducted a review of the property with its surroundings?
Yes, I visited the sites on a couple of occasions. Also very familiar with the area, having traveled through it many, many occasions.
And have you reviewed the application?
Yes, I've reviewed the materials provided by their counsel, as well as some other documentation generated by the board's engineer, notice documents. Like that.
Have you reviewed the Seabright's documents related to the land use?
Yes, with regard to documents available on Seabright, I reviewed the current zoning ordinance, critically the 2017 Borough Master Plan. Also have taken a look through Seabright Strategic Recovery Planning Report 2015, Seabright 2020 Recovery Plan. Understanding the issues the town has faced since Seabright President Sandy, I thought those documents were useful for understanding the context of things that come out.
What does the master plan say about this particular zone?
Well, with regard to the applicable land use district, the R2 district, the proposed land use plan in the 2017 Borough Master Plan tells us, quote, "This land use district corresponds to the R2 zone district. It's located on the western side of the borough and encompasses about 11.4% of the total land area. It's recommended that duplexes not be permitted in the R2 zone. The Existing multifamily areas within the R2 land use district have been removed and reclassified as being in the R5 land use district, which is discussed below.
So, just to back up, the master plan you said was adopted when?
I was adopted last summer.
600.
So, what you read, what is the guidance from the master plan with respect to duplexes?
I think the master plan couldn't be clearer. Duplexes are simply not permitted. They're relegated to the status of a non-conforming, isolated in that regard. They're allowed to continue under the statute, under our case law, but otherwise constrained until they can be replaced with a permitted use.
Okay, so the applicant needs to seek a variance today, which he is seeking for use of variance.
That's correct.
Okay. You heard the testimony of the planner tonight and give the standard for D2 variance to be big.
Yes, I did.
Do you agree with the standard claimed by the
planner? No, respectfully, I do not. I think the case law is clear on D variances. You have to present special reasons why the variance is justified and demonstrate that you've met, in that regard, the positive criteria, and also go through proofs regarding the negative criteria. I don't believe that was done. Certainly, I didn't hear it with regard to the positive criteria and special reasons at all.
So with respect to the special reasons, the applicant's claim mentioned livability and building of the property. Are either of those, in your opinion, special reasons that justify the D2 variance?
No, they're not. The statute's very clear. The case law is very clear. There are enumerated purposes of planning in the statute, and all boards must take action that is mindful of those reasons, those purposes of planning, and mindful of the master plan. And simply hearing that something makes sense, or something is aesthetically beneficial, or something is a good idea, doesn't comport with these requirements.
Going to the negative criteria, has the applicant satisfied that burden?
I believe the applicant attempted to address that burden, but in my opinion, basically I have a different opinion as to the negative criteria. And in particular, there was some discussion of landscaping and trees. I've been to the property for the adjacent areas, adjacent right of way, and the adjacent property itself present some board photographs generated from that visit.
Mr. P, I'll ask you to mark these. How would you like it? Oh?
Sure.
Oh, one. So this is 01, you know, that's 03.
And 01 is what?
01 is a view of lot 33, lot 20.01.
Subject property?
Subject property.
Okay.
From Mountain View Way, looking east. And you can see the Cape Cod structure. These are from the back of the structure, all these pictures, mainly because that's what the substantial addition is. So you see the existing Cape Cod structure. Elevated as it is on its foundation, there's a 6-foot-high fence to the southern property border, and Mountain View Way is here on the north side of the property. Wintertime conditions being as they are, these are in the trees, but these trees that are located along this property line are substantial.
And mature.
This is Exhibit 02. Exhibit 02 is looking along the southern property line, initially from near Ocean Avenue, looking back to the west. And you can see the relationship of the Land's End condominium fence to the property, and how close it is. And how devoid of landscaping it is in the existing condition. When you come to about the midpoint of the property, looking back towards Ocean Avenue, you see rear of the structure. You can see the some of the backyard features, some landscaping. And you start to get an appreciation of how the vegetation in that area is located. And, you know, again, it being winter, it looks like it's a pretty open vista. However, when this tree in particular leaves out, I think you can appreciate that you basically wouldn't get a view of that structure at all. That condition is also that condition is also depicted in this picture.
That's 03.
This is exhibit 03. It's essentially from the same vantage point on the property in the south, looking back towards the back of the house. My estimation from looking at the plants is that this tree will be gone, as with this tree that you barely see in this image. I think in that regard, it's notable that whereas Lands' End does have landscaping on their side, they're protecting sort of their neighbors from the imposition of the bulk of the ones in the condominium, there is no reciprocation in the sense that should this non-conforming use expand, you would lose the landscaping, all the landscaping, that buffers that existing non-conforming use from the neighbors to the south. In that regard, I think there's a diminishment of the aesthetic resources they enjoy, as well as simply by virtue of the overall bulk of the addition proposed in this area. There's a substantial reduction in light area open space that's relative to the condition that exists today. So from that standpoint, there is an adverse impact on the neighboring property and on public good. The applicant's planner also indicated that he didn't believe that the intensity of the non-conforming use was being increased simply because the number of bedrooms was not increasing. And whereas bedroom count is a measure of intensity in a residential setting, I would actually argue that floor area is also a measure of intensity in a residential setting. In this regard, the application, post-application, excuse me, about 130% increase in floor area based on the information provided by the applicant. And so my view as a planner is that indeed it is a substantial intensification of non-conformity. And in that regard, essentially puts more investment, more habitable space, more intensity of residential use in an area that is understandably a flood prone area. And so I see harm to the public good in the sense that this intensification of non-conforming use in that kind of a location brings more, potentially brings more people, more investment into harm's way, which is adverse to the public.
And based on your findings, is it your conclusion that the applicant has or has not met their burden to allow this board to vote in favor of their application?
Well, in the first part, I don't believe the applicant has presented to the board a rationale that is consistent with the case law regarding the exchange of non-conforming uses. So on that basis alone, I think the board needs to reject the application. Moreover, my perspective as a planner, I actually bring to every application I look at a desire to find a rationale and purpose of plan to address. I I can't identify a readily apparent purpose planning that isn't addressed and would support this D2 variance to expand non-conforming use. So on that basis as well, I think the board certainly is capable of rejecting the application. I would argue it should reject the application.
Turning to the bulk of the variances, they've been classified, the basis for them have been classified as a hardship given the existing nature of them and the size of the lot. Would you concur that the standard for granting those variances would be on an undue hardship standard, the C1 variance?
I, in short, don't see the waivers as, or the variances as hardships. I understand that the lot is an undersized lot. If the applicant were coming in with a conforming use, I think there's an argument to be made for a hardship. I think the hardship, to the extent there is one, is ameliorated by the existence of the two-unit duplex. In my thinking in this regard is that by virtue of the non-conformity of the use, the applicant is actually approaching the board with what I would recommend, potentially C2 variance. C2 variance is different because in the C2 variance, the applicant has to again present special reasons why that variance, the purposes of planning that are advanced in order to meet the positive criteria on the variance. The hardship, the applicant does need to do that. And to the form, no information is presented with regard to what purposes of planning are advanced by these variances. So from my view as a professional planner, they're not hardships, they're not C1 variances, they're C2 variances, and the applicant has to meet the burden required by case law, by the statute and case law with regard to granting C2 variances.
Is the hardship further ameliorated or mitigated by the fact that there's not just raising the property to meet the field standard, but by expanding it beyond the already existing?
Yes, in fact. I think the tension that's felt by me in this regard is if this applicant were presenting a single family home that otherwise met the ordinance requirements but didn't meet the side yard or front yard setbacks due to the nature of the corner lot undersized, that's a condition the applicant can do nothing about, and it's coming to the board with the five right dues. That's not the application being presented.
And so your conclusion with respect to the bulk variance is as well?
My conclusion with respect to the bulk variance is that there's no purpose of planning being identified or I can identify as warranting the variance on a positive criteria basis. And as I discussed with regard to the D variance, I believe that there are detriments to the public good and the zone plan and master plan. So the negative criteria are not met as well.
Okay, under the principles of zoning, what has our courts have held for decades when it comes to expansion of non-conforming uses, are expansions favored or disfavored?
Expansions are just
okay, so they're to be strictly construed by
you know, maybe you can just ask him the question. I mean, listen, I'm very liberal, but you know, remove the spoon and then just let him go.
Very good. How is the board supposed to give deference to the master plan with respect to use variances?
The board should be guided by the master plan and everything. The board owns the master plan. This is a combined board, and I need to explain to the board their role both as a planning board and a zoning board in that regard. The planning board owns the master plan. It's not a creature of council, and it is your own guiding lights in terms of where you see the community going. And the language in the master plan is clear and compelling. And concise. Duplexes are relegated to non-conforming uses. They should be isolated They should not be allowed to expand except under particular circumstances consistent with the statute and case law. Up until the point when they can be replaced by a permitted use. That's the way our planning structure works in Purdue. And I believe what the board should be guided by.
Is there any other point you'd like to make that you haven't been able to provide this application?
No, sir.
Any other questions?
Any board members have any questions of this testimony, or do you have?
I have questions.
You have?
But,
okay, go ahead. That's part of your testimony.
Okay. I'll talk about this. I'm going to show you what's marked as A7. Okay. And isn't it correct that the architect testified that there probably be two trees removed
from the property? That was the architect.
Okay. And those trees are on the property here closer to Mountain View Avenue.
I can't tell you where those trees are, sir. I'm not the architect, and I'm not seeing the time to identify the trees for the remote.
And you see all these trees here that are on the land exam property, correct? And do they act also as a buffer between the applicant's property and the land exam property?
Those trees act as a buffer provided by the land exam to protect their neighbors.
Okay, thank you.
The other way around.
Right. But it is a buffer.
Those trees are there.
It's a buffer.
Yeah, thank you. How far is the applicant's property from the closest condo? Did you measure that?
No.
Okay, is it fair to say that it's not right up against the property line? It's some distance back? Is that fair?
The condos you're referring to are set back from the property line? Okay.
And then you testified about also the expansion of the non-conforming use, correct? And it's correct as a pre-existing non-conforming use that you have,
correct? Correct.
Okay. And you testified that the expansion would increase. It would be a detriment, a negative criteria, because it increases the living space. That's your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Well, no. Okay. But you're saying that the addition increases the living space 130%, I think you said?
Based on the square footage provided by the applicant's architect, we believe the increase is more than 130%. In terms of floor area.
And would you say maybe double? Would that be accurate, almost double?
More than double. 130% is 100% is double, 130% is more than double.
So what's the lot, what's the building coverage right now?
Building coverage?
Yes.
The applicant testified just to the building coverage being somewhere
18%.
And the applicant is proposing an expansion of building coverage of 36%, correct?
I believe that was the testimony was something on that.
Board. Right. And the maximum building coverage allowed is 50%, correct?
Right.
So that even though there's expanding that, it's still well under the maximum lot coverage. Building coverage,
sorry, the building coverage criteria of the ordinance is met.
Right, and then by 14%. Okay. So that's one question.
I have one. I just want to make sure I got your testimony right, because I write fast and I can't read it. Let me just phrase it again. You testified that the intensity of the use was increased. Didn't matter that it was two bedrooms going to two bedrooms, but it was the square footage that increased the intensity, and that you thought it was a far more intense based upon the expansion. But it wouldn't be as intense if it was a single family. I wasn't sure how that played out.
So the applicant's planner made the observation and in his opinion, because the number of bedrooms did not change, there was not an intensification of the non-conformance. Respectfully, I would observe that the substantial additional floor area in both units intensifies
the use. But I thought you said it would be different if it was a single family home.
My testimony with regard to the bulk variances was
now, before we got to the bulk, you said that. I wrote it down during your use variance portion of your testimony of it, but maybe I got it wrong, so I just, I guess I did.
I.
So whether it was single family, if we took out the use variance part, and it was just the increase in the square footage, you would still say that was a substantial intensification of use? If it was a single family home being increased in the same way?
If the applicant was proposing a single family home here, the burden on the bulk variances would be different as much as from.
Okay, just the bulk, not the use.
No.
Okay.
I
had it wrong. Yep. No, I wrote it down wrong. So I just want, that's why I wanted to clarify. So.
But within that same testimony, he stated that if it was a single family home and he had, as you called it, the by right use. But if this is an already existing two family unit, he doesn't have a by right use.
Not to expand.
Under case law, there is no right to expand.
But we've also heard testimony over many years here about expansion of a non-conforming use. He's not expanding the use. And I've heard that argument.
Well,
he's expanding the structure. The use is remaining the same.
In my opinion, the use is expanding. Based on
the. He's not adding another use. He's not expanding the use. The use is still
that's
the same, right?
And you're correct. Mr. Higgins said the other way that the use really wasn't expanding by this expansion. He disagrees with Mr. Higgins' testimony. That's really where we are, is that either way, I mean, technically it's an expansion of a non-conforming use because you are expanding the structure. Mr. Higgins, not this one, says that is not an added intensification of the use. Mr. McPeak says it is. So that, basically.
And semantics matter in this to a large extent. And, expansion and intensification are different things. And in this case, the expansion of a non-conforming use is, I think, from my understanding of planning and the case law that I've had to live within for 25 years, this is an expansion of a non-conforming
use. Anybody else on the board have any questions of this testimony? open to the public, is there anybody else in the public that has any questions?
Of your own witness?
Okay. We'll close this portion. Do you have any further testimony on this?
I have no further.
Then we'll open it to the public for any other comments or statements.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief. Public policy in the state discourages the expansion of prior non-conforming uses. That's clear by the legislature in the decades of Supreme Court appellate decision cases that hold that for such variances, you need to show both positive, negative criteria and the special reasons. The applicant has failed to do that, as presented by our planner this evening. Absent that showing, the board is without the jurisdiction to grant that application. I would respectfully request that application be denied for those reasons. With respect to the D2 variant, our planner has testified as to potential negative impacts on neighboring property owners, and also with respect to your very own master plan, which was adopted less than a year ago. Surely, if you have a master plan that is 40, 50 years old, deference is one thing. If you have a master plan that you've spent time crafting, you've been approved by both this body and the governing body to expand the scope that we're discussing today, which is 130%, is certainly providing no deference to that master plan and to the state public policy, which is to not expand absent special reasons to do so. Today, the applicant and their experts have testified that the reason they wanted to do that is to make it more livable. There's no case that I'm aware of, and no statute that I'm aware of, that provides the livability, the functionality, the comfortability of the home is a special reason to warrant that strict scrutiny that this board must give to an expansion. And for that reason, the two variants, in my opinion, are my client's opinion, should be rejected. With respect to the both variances, the applicant treats them as a hardship variance, C1 variance. It is our contention that they're truly C2 variances, requiring, again, showing special reasons to expand those setbacks. Those reasons were not testified to, they were not provided. For that reason, again, the jurisdiction is not for this board to be able to provide that relief. Again, the state courts have required strict scrutiny with respect to expansion. For the record, I just cite to Urban versus Planning Board, 124 New Jersey 651, and Bonaventure versus Red Lake, 350 NJ Super 420, as well as a myriad of other cases, again, for the record. In Lehigh versus Atlantic Highlands, 252 New Jersey Super 392, the court overturned a planning board's decision to expand a residential non-conforming use, and the expansion there was 158 square foot, is the addition that they received. The courts overturned that, even that slight addition, because there was absence of special reason. Here, the applicant is seeking over 2,200 additional square foot of floor area. The applicant is seeking an additional 30 feet of length. Both of those are more than 100% of the existing property, again, without an absence of special reasons. When the applicant started today, Mr. Scurria classified conditions as modest. I would not tend to agree with that classification. I would think these are substantial. The board should give it that consideration as well. With that, I would rest, simply requesting that we do give this application its due consideration for denying the consideration of your master plan, which is clear on its face that duplex does not be permitted, and the law, which expects and requires that as quickly as possible non-conforming uses become conforming. This use, as we've testified, has been non-conforming for quite some time, existing for 101 years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mondo.
Yes.
I think the objector and the objector's planner signing the master plan and citing the general rule, but is not really focusing on specific natures of this property in a case-by-case basis. And constantly refers to this property as such a big expansion, over double the expansion. It doesn't mention that it's still 15% below the building coverage here. I think basically the testimony of the architect, the planner, and the applicant as a whole shows that they're doing the absolutely not abusing it, just doing the minimum necessary to make it a livable space, to increase it so it's protected from any flooding there, and providing for, I would say, still a modest expansion here. The architect specifically as to all the setbacks. There is only very minor extensions of pre-existing setbacks. The planner has testified at length as to this being a D2 variance, technical variance, and then we had the planner also testified as to C1 variances, hardships necessary, and went through at length the different reasons, the special lot that would be conforming would be this 8-foot by 100-foot building. It just doesn't make sense. If you look at this application makes sense. It fits within the requirements for a request for a use variance. Our planner has testified specifically as to that. When you look at the nature of the street, the nature of the property, and the circumstances, this is appropriate expansion of a pre-existing non-conforming use. There is the picture.